This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, 6 a.m. on Tuesday, 12th of March. You're with Morning Run. I'm Julian Ng and joined by my noble and learned colleagues, Lin Mark and Sharitz Abdullah. Sorry to sound so legal and judgy. Judgy as in like a judge.
I was going to say you sounded like Chuang there for a second.
Yeah, I'm trying to. He's my model, you know. I'm trying to imitate him. How are you guys this morning?
Good, thank you, Julian.
Not too bad.
Not too bad. Yeah. Too early in the day, I think, to feel anything except for sleepiness.
Yeah, especially when it started raining at about
3:30. That's right.
It was nice and cozy and cold. And, you know, yesterday was International Nap Day.
Yeah, I missed that. I missed that, but I napped anyway. Like I always do every day.
Well, still nap day in the US and right now.
There you go.
Well, there you go.
Still. Let's just pack up and go home and have a nap and celebrate.
For after work, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, the rain this morning, that was interesting because I think I was woken up at about 1 something a.m. in the morning. And then I went to close the windows. And the next thing I knew that I had to wake up. I mean, I was shortchanged by a few hours. It just felt like... you know, I just had to wake up so quickly after the rain.
Oh, right.
I wanted to sleep more.
Well, when I woke up, it hasn't rained yet. It was extremely warm, in fact. But suddenly, yeah, just turned around. And,
yeah, it's always nice when there's a storm going on while you're asleep. So what do we have for today?
Well, yesterday was the first session, parliamentary session, for this year. So one of the things is from Gobind Singh, and he was speaking about social media. And one of the things he highlighted was how much we rely on it, right? I mean, it's so intertwined with our lives these days. And of course, on social media, there's always bad apples out there doing nasty things and saying nasty stuff. So
that's what you think, because you disagree with their views.
That's right.
The trolls. So
everybody
the
seems to be
warriors.
Disagreeing with everybody, right? Well, you know, so they're talking about introducing a law to sort of curb or control this insensitive people. And so whether or not it's a futile attempt, that's what I'm thinking about.
Yep. And on a slightly lighter note, we will be talking a little bit about the lost practice of resting one day a week. So this is not answering work emails from your couch. This is concentrated rest. I mean, nowadays, we're so connected that even weekends aren't really days off work. They're just work from home days. So what we're curious about is whether you plan out your rest days.
Wonderful. And also coming up next, we have a discussion on DNA home testing kits. They're becoming more commonplace household items, and we'll discuss the implications of this, especially whether you're comfortable with it. To take us there, in the meantime, here is Honey, I Need by The Pretty Things, obviously a band that I know very well, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that's Don't Stop by Fleetwood Mac. And you're with The Morning Run with Julian, Lin, as well as Sharitz. DNA testing kits are becoming more commonplace. For about $100, you can spit into a tube and send it for testing and have a full report about your health and even your ancestry sent back right back to you. So 1 in 3 people in the US have diabetes, and this company called 23andMe, apparently this is quite a big thing right now in the US, they set up to develop this first direct-to-consumer genetic testing kit sent to you. And it's becoming more popular because, you know, everybody is worried about their diabetic tendencies in the US. But, you know, I mean, is this something to be worried about, or is this like something that will help us, help our lives?
I think it is. I personally feel like it is something that we need to think about a little bit more closely before we send out our genetic data to a company for them to use as they will. I mean, I remember when 23andMe first kind of hit the news a couple of years ago. I think it sounded really cool, you know, because at the time it was mainly an ancestry test. So you can send it out and see, okay, how many percent Scandinavian are you? How many percent East Asian? Where in East Asia are you from? Okay. So it was quite a fad. And over time, it has developed into allowing you to test for hereditary diseases, certain predispositions. But ultimately, if you take a step back, you are sending private genetic data that is unique to you to a company. And a lot of people, so obviously the company has a vested interest in maintaining that privacy for you because they want you to trust them ultimately. I think about 80% of their clientele also kind of check the box that says, hey, you can share my data with private research institutions, but you don't really know what those private research institutions are doing. So there's a big question mark over this for me.
Yeah, exactly. It might come back and bite you in the behind.
That's right. I mean, so that's interesting when they're able to start sharing those data and information to, I mean, let's take one example, insurance company, for example. I mean, what is it that can they do with those information? So there's two perspectives in this. I mean, there's the consumer's perspective, there's insurance perspective. Consumer, for example, premium, you know, as we know, premium rely on how risky you are as an individual. And the more information that's collected, then and the more that they know about you, and you know, there is a chance that premium could go high. And now the more concerning part is that, more worrying is that whether or not insurance will start using this information as part of them, you know. If it was a mandatory sort of requirement before you actually sign up to a premium. So,
load you on the premiums or even not cover you if you have certain predispositions, right?
And
that is a big negative as far as DNA testing is concerned. I think the government would have to step in to regulate this because America is an entirely very capitalistic society. So they have the corporation's interests at heart. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that in other jurisdictions, you can actually institute certain privacy measures, right? Along the lines of what we'll discuss later, what Gobind is doing. But, you know, if you know more about your body, then this is not a bad thing because you can take steps. If you're predisposed to get certain diseases, you can take steps to change your diet, change your lifestyle, and expand your life, longevity.
Yeah, and I think bottom line is there's that underlying issue of trust. I mean, between one institution with you as whoever that you associate with, and one, you know, besides health and insurance. And I was wondering how this would also affect your relationship with your, you know, potential, you know, spouse, you know, soon to be. I mean, it can become a topic of discussion. And it's, you know, right now the mandatory is to test for HIV, right? Mm. What if it starts getting more complicated than that? What if they want to start watching off? They want to, you know, maintain a good offspring or something. And, you know, all this comes into question.
Oh, yeah,
and
that,
it becomes available, right?
That comes into the couple discussions because you don't want to have a child, to birth a child that would have complications, not only for yourselves, but for the child to grow up with such complications seem very unfair to them as well. Also, I'm wondering, what's the difference between this kind of DNA testing and the testings that we have today, the traditional testings, right? Send your blood to the lab. Because these guys don't really collect information about you. They just take your samples and give you back your report without actually collecting information.
So, I mean, I think the biggest difference here would be time, right? When you go to the hospital for a full blood workup or for testing, you're there for a minimum of, 3 hours? Whereas this kind of test, you get it in the mail, you spit in a tube, and you send it off. So the convenience, it would play a big part. I mean, putting aside the fact that we don't know where this information is going, I would do it. Chiefly to save myself the 3 hours of sitting in a hospital. But then there's also the fact that hospitals do have laws to prevent them from sharing patient data, whereas this, you're reliant on the company, really.
Okay. From DNA, we're going to be talking about rest, especially your one day rest per week with Lost That Art. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was This Too Shall Pass by OK Go. And you're with The Morning Run. Julian, Lin and Sharad's here with you. From Becoming Minimalist, the website, is this idea that we have abandoned the practice of resting one day a week because this is an age of worshipping overachievers, isn't it? And touching the phone 200 times a day. A lot of productivity apps tell us to go out for a run, climb a mountain, climb a hill. So from a work viewpoint, it's no longer about business. Nowadays, it's about busyness, right? Is this one big guilt trip that corporations are unleashing on us?
Don't know if corporations are the one leashing this on us.
Oh, I think of course it is.
Really? Well, we still get that 2 days off. Is this, I think, something that we put upon ourselves, really? I mean, that, you know, that mandatory 2 days off that you have, you start filling it up with errands and, you know, things that you just to justify. Justify that, hey, look, I'm doing something productive, something meaningful on top of my work. But sometimes it's just so tiring, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Just doing those things.
It is. I am completely guilty of using my weekends as an extended work day. I was just looking. So because we were about to talk about this, I just looked at my phone, the screen time option. And I average about 3 hours on the phone a day and about 100 pickups as well in a single day. It's a...
Wow.
It's a, yeah.
So you're not too far off my 200 times, which was a number that I made up. I made up that number. 100 times a day. Wow. Okay. I know. Why do we feel so guilty? Why do we feel that we have to do something? And isn't resting a good enough virtue to have? You know, like nowadays when you sit down on the couch and start just not doing anything, people look at you weirdly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's really important. I mean, I do. I think I've made it for some time now. I think I've allocated at least one day of just really try to switch off and, you know, just try not to be bothered about, you know, making plans or anything unless it's really necessary and, you know, obligations like family get together and stuff. And those are the days when you... It really does replenish you. It does get you ready for the next week.
Mm-hmm. Rejuvenation.
Yeah. That's right. So, you know, there's also that, you know, just going on economics a bit, is that whole productivity versus ideas and, you know, counterproductive if you are tired and so forth. And I think, you know, the trend is catching on. People are starting to realize this, especially in Korea and Japan. I mean, last week, I think we spoke about how Korean traders... get some extra hours of rest in the midday or something. I mean, just less hours.
Seriously?
Well, yeah, but if you're going to switch on your phone and start reading and stuff, and so it's counterproductive. But I think people are realizing it, employers and stuff.
So how do you define rest on a Sunday? Does that mean that you can't watch TV, you can't Netflix and chill, or does that come into the equation, right? Or is this just like pure rest? Try to do as little as possible. Try to keep to the Sabbath, as it were.
For me, it used to be putting my phone face down on a table out of my reach and just not checking any of my WhatsApps because we work primarily in WhatsApp groups. So that would be the thing that would constantly draw me back into work is seeing my peers. So it's a combination of connectedness and peer pressure, I guess, because you see your colleagues responding to the group chat. You see your colleagues providing, you know, giving their opinions. And it makes you feel like you have to also contribute. But when I put aside rest days on the occasional week, it's more like once a month than once a week, I just refuse to touch my phone at all. And I'll just read a book, watch TV.
But I do think that my conspiracy theory of corporations like trying to guilt trip you is not far off the mark, you know, because all these things that have been created is just to make you feel guilty and just to make you have this, they try to sanitize it by a sense of responsibility. Right. Your time is our time. You're part of our family. And therefore, you got to do things for us, even though it's a Sunday or a Saturday. Right. So I think it's not far off the mark, which is why this other article from Forbes about how Netflix is such a great company because they allow the employees to work on projects and they treat their employees like adults. No MCs, no annual leave. You go and come as you wish, as long as you finish your projects.
Yeah. Right? So but I think Netflix is... You know, it's appealing. It's an appealing idea from Netflix. And realistically, it's just our social fabric is just made you know, much more sophisticated. It's just much more sophisticated than that. And then Netflix is lucky in that sense that they have the financial muscle to really draw really, you know, one of the best talents out there who are probably.
That's interesting because that means you're saying that a lot of our corporations don't have the financial muscles to pull this off, which means that they're not very competitive, right? Which means that they have to hire the right people at Netflix. So it becomes this whole chicken and egg situation. Well, tell us what you think, whether you should reclaim your Sundays as well as whether employers should treat you like adults and have you allow you not to answer your WhatsApp every second of the day. WhatsApp us 01878-9899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are coming up to the 6:30 news. In the meantime, here's Eddie's Gun by The Cooks, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears. You're listening to Morning Run. You're with Julian, Lynn and Sharitz. The Communications and Multimedia Ministry is thinking about new laws to punish people that put up insensitive comments on news portals. In fact, to be more exact, the government is thinking of laws to actually not punish the commenters, but punishing actually the news portals themselves, which allow people to put up insensitive comments.
So I take it that means government is looking at putting the responsibility of those platform owners monitor
and censor
and regulate and censor comments coming from their readers, I guess. Yeah, sounds like a tough job.
Yeah, so the communications minister said that the ministry has received public complaints regarding inflammatory remarks on social media as well as news portals, which touched on sensitivities, racial sensitivities, religious sensitivities, as well as comments on the royal institution. I don't know. That said, I am generally against the government tightening regulations on speech.
Me too.
Completely. So I don't, and I read this and I instinctively say absolutely not. You know, we don't need this. We've already got laws in place curbing speech. We should be looking at rolling those back and maybe educating the public on what is and is not appropriate to say, rather than giving the government more power to penalize these people.
Absolutely. I think that all those old laws, the ISA, the OSA, the Sedition Act, I mean, we're trying to get rid of them, and this is kind of like a one step forward and two steps back.
Yeah, so, I mean, previously we're quite accustomed to the law under the Communications and Multimedia Act, which sort of monitors whatever that's been said that could annoy or irritate anybody through the social media, right? And so I guess now the question, when you say educating people, it sounds a bit long term, and there's something that is short term, which is happening today, which is happening right now, and there are insensitive remarks that has been thrown out to the public, which I guess that's the concern. I mean,
insensitive to whom though, and how do you define that? Because something that you say that you think might be very innocent could be offensive to me, and vice versa, right?
That's right.
How do you actually define that? And I think that's going to be the biggest challenge for the government, because it really puts them in a position to be the decision maker as to what's insensitive or not. And it, as you say, it becomes very draconian.
Yeah.
I think the other thing here is that, you know, as you say, this is happening in the short term, but instituting a new law is not in the short term. A new law is going to be more damaging in the long term. Yeah, it's forever. And it will be more difficult for the government then to roll it back 5-10 years into the future. I feel like this is a knee-jerk reaction to social media and to people expressing their opinions on social media. And I think that if this is a concern for the government, then they should use the existing laws, but also at the same time implement these public education programs or just raise awareness on what is and is not acceptable.
Yeah, and we can relate to that. I mean, there was, I think, last year when we introduced sometime in January that anti-fake news law, and only to be considered being repealed not long after the new government came in, and of course that didn't go through. It didn't pass it didn't pass the Senate. I mean, it did pass the Parliament. I don't know what's the status of, you know, of repealing the anti-fake news law, where there was a lot of contention. Like you said, there are existing laws to sort of manage situations such as this, because you don't want to get situation like this out of hand. But when you ask who, you know, who are we referring to, I guess it's the citizens of Malaysia, and it's just the spectrum of mindset that is out there is just so hard to, you know, pinpoint exactly. So there's just no one way of looking at things, and it's just how do you manage, especially with a country that is this diverse, right?
Right. So there is the argument to be made that the Malaysian public is not mature enough to deal with this.
Absolutely.
But then, if you don't...
What are you saying? What exactly are you saying when you say that, right? If let's say the authorities are implying that we're not mature enough, then I think there are some other things that we need to do about that rather than a short-term law to curb that. Also, I think that there is a very good self-regulating mechanism in our social media, because if you look at the incident or the case of the IMU student, the sexist remarks that was being put up by that IMU student, he was vilified on social media. And I think that is regulation. Excuse me. That's regulation enough for him. So I don't know. I think we are mature enough to take care of this by ourselves without any laws to watch over us. Okay, we'll be coming back with another discussion after this, and also to look at some of your comments as well. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9, Roxanne by The Police. You're with The Morning Run. Julian Lin and Charis here with you. Thank you for all your messages. I must say that there are some highly disciplined people out there. For example, Michael, he says that Michael only checks his WhatsApp or WeChat or email when he feels the need to. Wow, that requires like a superhuman strength. Michael, kudos to you for having that sort of discipline.
Michael, you need to teach us your ways.
Yes.
Do not have this self-discipline.
And we also got a WhatsApp message from Saw, where, you know, she's saying, this is with regards to the social media discussion we had. The real issue here is people need to give up the notion that it is your right not to be offended. Government should focus more on educating a citizen on being open-minded instead of pandering to this religious bigots.
Aha. Okay. There's this thing called confirmation bias, right? Where you just, as a cognitive, I want to say disorder, but it's not that serious. It's just a cognitive bias where you go out there to look for opinions and news that agree with you, because mm-hmm. you always can find something no matter which side you're on, right? And when you actually call someone a bigot, are you yourself a bigot, right? That's the question. That's always what I have in my mind when I have strong views about something. So yeah, but good point, Saul.
Yeah, so we also have another WhatsApp here from Kevin that says, along similar lines, if these people are so readily offended, they can choose to stay offline and live under a rock.
They need to talk to Michael about that. How to stay offline.
How to
go offline. Thanks, Michael. And thanks, Kevin.
Thank you. Yeah. So I do agree with these people to a certain extent. I think there is definitely a culture of, if you are offended, the immediate reaction is to shout, "I'm offended. You offended me," rather than having a discussion to say, "Why do you disagree?" Right.
I think that's a very good way. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing that really needs to
happen. That's also
more.
A mindfulness practice, you know, saying to yourself, "Oh my goodness, I'm so angry and I want to kill the other guy, but I'm not going to do it."
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there's also that perspective. I can't help but think that there's also that perspective where there are, you know, there's people on the other side of the fence who do not have the same sort of exposure, experience, or education that a lot of people in the urban areas do have, or those who have, who are more, you know, sort of slightly privileged. So, I mean, these are the individuals that I think needs to be focused on when we talk about education, as what are the fundamental things that should be instilled in them so that they can tolerate, you know, a more civil conversation online, for example.
Absolutely. Mr. Tan, I think not very happy with our discussion on the Sunday rest. He says that working longer and harder is a requirement to be competitive. And, you know, this, I think this is a good point about whether rest is a privilege for the middle classes and above, right? And not for people who really have to work hard to put food on the table. Are we blabbering about something that is like a first world concern, right? Hashtag first world issues, where, you know, I want to rest on Sundays, but no, other people have got to go out there and make a living.
Reality check, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Tan, for your message. And we also have this other interesting news, or rather an interesting write-up by the Financial Times. And it's asking, does a social status still matter when you reach a certain age? And the story here is that this FT, Financial Times journalist, quit her job in 2017 to become a teacher. And she realized that people gave her a funny look at social events when she said she was a teacher. Before, when she told other people that she was a Financial Times columnist, that, you know, they went, whoa, I want to talk to you. But now that you're a humble teacher, she feels that she hasn't, not that she minds, she hasn't got the same kind of social recognition, like status recognition as before. So do you guys care about social status? And I have to be honest here, you know, it's, it does come into the, decision making process, right? How much status you have, but not too much, but you know, it's at the back of your mind. I'm, for example, a journalist or a worker with BFM. Mm-hmm. Does that come with a healthy dose of status?
Yeah, so that's, now that you put us on the spot like that, I'm not too sure. But I think there was a period where, you know, in everybody's lives, I mean, I'm sure you can relate, that, you know, being recognized, being seen and being known for what you do, what you are as a person, I mean, was an important factor in, you know, in decision making. But as you come to an age where you start realizing that, yeah, for an example, family comes to the fold, and, you know, it just matters slightly less.
So this is where the bread and butter issue come in. When you are young, you want to have a job with some money so that you can support your family. And that might invariably come with a kind of status, right? But as you get older, do you think that you can actually... I mean, Lynn and Sharice, both of you are extremely young, you know, from a different generation. Do you think that when looking forward, when you become older, or even today, do you care too much about status?
I care more than I'd like to admit about status. So I do think it's definitely related to where in your life you are, because when you are young, you're starting out and you have your first job or your second job, and you are trying to prove yourself to your family, to society at large, to say, hey, I can provide for myself and potentially a partner. But then once, you know, as Sharit said, once you have a family, once you've reached that stability, proving yourself, I think, doesn't necessarily mean as much. It's just a nice thing to boast about at family occasions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's the rapid fire questions, right? Grab or BMW? Answer, Lynn.
Oh, I would go for a Grab just for
what?
The price.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I mean, if you can,
if price was
aspire,
not a factor,
aspire for something,
yep.
Yeah, Grab or BMW.
Grab.
BMW.
Nice.
I'm being honest here, Sharon.
Fantastic. This is a great discussion. Thank you, guys. Thank you so
well
much
for the
all.
Question.
Thank you so much for all your messages. And we're heading up to the 7 a.m. news, and after that, we'll be coming back to look at some business news. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.